When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This is the D-Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Welcome along to another D-Word podcast. On this edition, my guest is Andy Gareza. Andy is a member of the Muskeaga Lake Cree Nation in Western Canada and CEO of Bluebell Village, pioneering new approaches to support families and individuals navigating the challenges of dementia. Andy, you're welcome to the D-Word. Great to have you here as my guest. Plenty to talk about. But before we get into all that, I mean, can you give us just a brief introduction in how you got involved in the whole dementia field?
Yeah, it was not something I ever really expected I would be doing. So I'm an engineer by trade. I worked in the oil and gas industry, you know, like a lot of people in Western Canada. I never really wanted to have anything to do with health, but as my grandmother and her Alzheimer's diagnosis was progressing, I found that the care that she was getting was the best that we could do and the best the care providers around her could do. And I said, I think we need to do something different. And then I put my engineering mind on and said, what can I do to make a difference? And it started out with the idea I want to build a dementia village in Alberta, that's where I live. And then that plan has kind of shifted and evolved into where I built a tech platform to support caregivers. So really I ended up in this because I was looking after my grandmother and, you know, one of many family caregivers. And I was like, how do we set up my grandmother for success? And like a lot of grandkids, I didn't want my grandma to suffer or have any problems. So that's what led me into this space, leaving my engineering career behind.
And I guess you were sort of coming at it, and you know, a lot of people I speak to, and a lot of the best ideas come from people thinking outside the box a little bit. So you know, using your engineering background and putting it on another area, and thinking, well, wait a minute, we could do this a bit differently.
100%. And so I like to say that I am dangerous at coding. I'm not great at coding, but I can do well enough that I can make something work, kind of, or I'll break it, one or the other. And so when it came to my grandma, I was like, there's multiple people caring for my grandmother. So in Canada, we have publicly funded healthcare, and we have multiple individuals oftentimes that care for a loved one when they're caring for them at home. We see that individuals are typically looked after in dementia space more often than not at home by the family. And like my grandma, like many, we had many people coming in, and I saw that my grandmother's experience was we had multiple family companion or multiple family caregivers. We had multiple home care and some companion care companies. People are all coming and caring for grandma. And I was like looking at them, I was thinking, what can we do differently? Because no one is really communicating. They're all communicating for my grandmother. How can I build something that enables them to all communicate? How can I build something that enables them to all work towards a common goal versus this company is doing this thing because that's their objective. This other company is working this goal because that's their objective. And their family is doing this because we know what grandma wants. So how can we all work work together. And ultimately, that's what led me to kind of down this road, is I said I need to build something that can enable all of us to work towards a common, succinct plan. And then I thought, hey, my one grandmother who had Alzheimer's was born to English parents. My other grandmother was born on reserve, and she's First Nations, and this one she's Indigenous. And I was thinking, like, what is the difference between these? How do we ensure that both grandmothers would have received the same level of care? And that ultimately was part of I'd say, one of the more pivotal revelations in the development of Bluebell. Like, how would I make support so that all these people could care appropriately for my grandmother, regardless of their care background? So yeah, it was really out of a necessity that I made Connect, and which is our digital tool. And it was not expected, Pete. Was not expected.
Yeah, I saw a great quote from you, which kind of sums up, I think, what you just said, which is we don't use the same colour for every brush stroke in a mural. So why are we using the same approach for every dementia journey? Which is absolutely true.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And that actually, that post I made was specifically referencing Indigenous dementia in Canada and globally. And one of my doctoral supervisors, name was Dr. Pamela Roach, and she talks and published on this systematic review of Indigenous dementia research and how much research has been done and published in that space. And the answer is zero, which is alarming, right? And that's one demographic. So what other areas are we not supporting, and how could our dementia care change if we approached all of people's nuanced cultural backgrounds, religious identities, personal likes? How would the dementia change, the dementia trajectory, be impacted by doing that? And it's such a important thing to me, because I don't want my grandmother being kind of fit into this box that this is how we have to care for you. This is what we have to do for. I didn't want that for my grandmother. And unfortunately, that's what, at least in Canada, the system really leads you towards.
I think possibly worldwide, actually, talking to people, it's what the system leads people towards. Because I don't, my background, I'm a Londoner, I was born in London, and so my kind of cultural background is all of that. And it probably as it does to you, it feels strange to me that if you've got somebody with a different cultural background, then it seems pretty obvious that they're going to respond better with those cultural references, and particularly when you have dementia, when you look back on long-term memories and things that have happened.
100%. I mean, if we look at, so we typically, and a lot of people that I that use Connect and I talk to about it, they use Alzheimer's Society of Canada as one of the, like, the de facto resources. So that's a great resource. Love it. There's lots of good information there. But firstly, it is based on a Eurocentric epistemological framework, right? That is how it's based on. What does the typical white European understand, believe? And that's typically how it's framed up. But then it also is predicated on Alzheimer's as being the diagnosis, where, as we know, if you have frontal temporal dementia, if you have Lewy bodies, the manifestation is different. The way we should be approaching the care is different. But a lot of the times it's all painted with a broad brush. And I mean, I am guilty of it. Until I understood the nuance between them, I would do that as well. And I can't fault people for doing that. But I think we need to approach them by understanding where the people are and what the people need, rather than saying, this is what we have to offer. Here, take it or leave it.
Well, I think, I looked at that bit of research that you mentioned earlier, and within it also said that in traditional care models, there's a real focus on the caregivers and the healthcare workers, not actually on the people themselves.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I don't know about other regions, but in Canada for sure. I mean, we typically have the care providers, they're overworked, They're oftentimes underpaid for the amount of stuff that they're having to do. And they're just trying to get by. They're doing the best that they can. So I cannot fault them at all. But ultimately, the person who gets left behind are people like my grandmother. And I wasn't going to let my grandmother be left behind. But that's all too common what does occur. And yeah, I think we just. The system is really supporting the individuals because there's so many people trying to get into the system from a needing care that they just can't prioritize them the way that they should. And economically, I mean, it's wildly expensive, right, to try and look after them.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Like you, I saw that research, and I'm going through to the conclusions, and basically it produced a big fat zero, which was quite shocking. And also was when I looked into a bit further, of course, there's higher rates and diagnosis at younger ages, in non in indigenous population as well. So that almost points to an even greater need for some form of research.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that so in Canada we went through colonization and Indigenous individuals were sent on reservations and typically they were introduced into alcohol as a way between the trader, the fur traders, as kind of a something you should be doing, and then it caused all these implications down the line, and then the reservation systems, and then disenfranchisement. All these issues that you could have long conversation on, but all these issues have led to problems. And we typically see the our elders or seniors, as they're kind of called in the general population, the was very, very low. So in 2006, less than 5% of Indigenous population was over the age of 65. Less than 5%. By 2016, this rose to 7.3%. By 2036, we're expecting it to be 15%. So we're starting to see our elders are now hitting that age. They're not dying for these health issues, which is great because now we're able to carry on stories and stuff. But now that we're seeing them reaching these ages, are we appropriately providing the care that they need? And in Alberta, it's interesting, or in Canada, really, it's interesting because all Indigenous individuals that are status First Nations have fully funded health care. So Canadians have health, or Canadians have health care, right? We have a health care system, but it doesn't include things like pharmacy medications. It doesn't include things like a wheelchair, psychology visits. It doesn't include these sorts of things under the general population. But we as First Nations individuals have under non-tribal health benefits, we have these kind of benefits provided to us for life. So we have this relationship with the system where we have a reliance, we can get the supports we need, but we find that Indigenous individuals aren't always accessing the system. They're choosing to step away, which is where you see some of these issues with the population and not lasting as long. So it's interesting, Dr. Roach, I referenced earlier, did this research that came out in 2023, roughly, and it found that between 10 and 25% of Alberta practicing physicians have reported explicit anti-Indigenous bias. This is self-identified through this research. And overall, Alberta physicians have a moderate implicit anti-Indigenous bias. So we're seeing Indigenous individuals that need care from the system. But you go see a physician or healthcare practitioner, and there's anti-Indigenous bias being manifested towards them. So why would you access it? There's various examples of this in practice. There was an individual in Winnipeg. His name was I can't his first name, but the last name was Sinclair, Brian Sinclair, I believe, and he sat in the waiting room for almost 36 hours because nobody wanted to care for him. He had, I think it was a kidney infection, urinary tract infection, and he sat there for 36 hours almost in his wheelchair, and everyone ignored him and ended up dying in the hospital emergency room waiting room because everyone ignored him. So you have all these issues, and I think from our indigenous population, we really need to focus on like how do we appropriately support them. There's a community here right near me, and I love how they say it. They say that they want their care to be delivered for community by community. And I think that's ultimately what comes down to really dementia care should be. Like, what is your community and how does that community want to handle it? And that's really where I came about is how do I approach this and bring the care that this community wants to be for that community, delivered by the community, instead of saying, let's put you in the system, let the system care for you. No, let's let your family, let's let your community around you care. Let's let that communal culture support you, right? That's generations ago, that's how it was done. So, and it worked fine then. So why isn't it working now?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Back to my guest now, Andy Grazer from Bluebell Village. I think probably one thing you need from that is you obviously need the knowledge in terms of the condition and the right tools to use. And sometimes, I guess, you know, what you were saying about access to healthcare, I guess that also blocks things. The last few years, we've learned quite a lot about brain health and the kind of things that can be preventative. But if actually you're being blocked for getting into the healthcare system, presumably you're being blocked from getting a lot of those messages as well.
100%. 100%. I mean, if you only know what you know, right? Yeah. Yeah. What I find interesting though is looking at supporting the Indigenous community, and so my company, right, it is a certified Indigenous business here in Canada. We are so I own a majority of the company, it being First Nations, and I built it to support my grandmother who wasn't Indigenous, but I also built it so that I can go to community and support community, let community deal with it and support themselves through this tool and make sure that people are caring for them, all right. So I don't know what the stat is in UK for dementia, but I would assume that it's probably a similar projection between now and 2050. We're expecting 187% increase between now and 2050. It's probably pretty close, right, in the UK?
Yeah.
In Indigenous populations, we're seeing a 273% increase between now and 2050. And we're not equipped to support. I've been in four different First Nation communities in the last month, and I've across Western Canada, and I've asked the question, so what are we doing and what are you guys doing as health leaders to support? What are you guys doing to proactively plan this wave is coming? What are you doing? How are we supporting this? And they go, we don't really know yet. We haven't quite figured it out yet. We want to do something. We recognize we need to do something, but we don't know what that something is.
That's
scary.
Yeah, that is exactly the word I was going to use because, you know, things move very quickly, don't they? And it's, I've done 280 episodes of the show. I talk to people all over the world, and there are a lot of commonalities with what we're talking about on this particular edition. I mean, one of the things you're doing is using technology, because we've got marvellous technology out there. But sometimes I feel, particularly in the UK, the health sector kind of a little bit skeptical about it and steer away from it, whereas it can have real good benefits.
I would love to say that the health system is widely accepting of things, but it's so bureaucratically heavy to integrate in and so expensive that a lot of people, myself included, I don't go down that road. Like we in Alberta use what's called Connect Care, for example. And what Connect Care does is it allows, it's a great tool. And from a third party perspective, it's a great tool because it allows all of physicians and nurses to all be connected, and they're able to share diagnostic reports and MRIs and these kind of things, which is a great service. But it doesn't allow the home care providers to understand what is happening. It doesn't allow the family to really be able to digest what's going on and make evidence-based decisions upon it. It does not easily allow third-party providers to go and integrate in to continue to adding to that robust set of information so that doctors can make informed decisions. So it doesn't do these things, and technically you can go down the road to have it integrated in, but you're spending, I don't know the exact cost, but I'd speculate it, at least hundreds of thousands of dollars at a minimum to get it in by the time you do security testing and build the integration components and stuff. The question is it worth the cost? Are the physicians necessarily going to see? And I've talked to various physicians and they go, we love what you're doing. We see value in it and we can see alignment in using it off the side of our desk, but certainly through Connect Care, walk away. It's not worth it. But I think the value of technology though is not in being able to bring it into that publicly accessible thing like we have Connect Care. I think it's giving families and caregivers the tools that they need to figure out your own direction. I mean, it doesn't make sense to always rely on, in my opinion, rely on the system to support all the problems, right? The system is trying to support so many people that people fall between the cracks all the time. So how do we use technology to give families the ability to care in the way that they want, I think is what's important. And that was the foundation of Bluebell Connect. And I kind of built Connect on three different pillars around that I want it to be clinically valid. So all recommendations that are in there are validated by my team of neurologists, psychologists, nurse, dementia specialists, all these folks that are way, way smarter than me that are personally specific. So what was your experience growing up like? What's your education like? What do you like? What do you not like? What is your mobility limitations? All these kind of things. And then finally, and arguably most important, culturally specific. So we're not telling somebody that lives in Zambia to do something that they do in, I don't know, an Asian region. We're not making a person in Zambia, for example, do specific Tai Chi things. That would work for specific Asian regions, but for a guy in Zambia, it's not going to work. So why are we forcing that as a recommendation when you're trying to teach them something that's not foundational to who they were years, decades ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, part of it seems when you look at it, it's the system working backwards from itself to the person, whereas we should actually be working the other way around. The person should be centre and it should all come from the person. And I think, you know, absolutely right. We're talking, you know, quite rightly about the indigenous population in Canada, but there are so many, you've just mentioned Zambia, wherever you go, this is a real common thing. It really revolves around having person-centred care. And in order to do that, you have to know about the person, and also you have to know about what's around them, so the care, the family, etc.
Totally. And I think it's reasonably a commonality that systems that have at least government semi-supported healthcare tend to lean away from person-specific, person-centered care because economically it's not viable oftentimes to focus on what everyone needs to do because you have different medication for every single person that instead of standardizing on this one that we can give for five different disorders. If we say this one works and this one works and kind of apply for each individual one, that gets expensive. You can't, economies of scale don't work. So, I mean, I understand why you get there, but as a family member like that, I just can't get past that.
Yeah, I think it's, It's very difficult when you, I guess, when you're involved in the medical model and models of care, it's sometimes really difficult to step outside that and go back to what we said at the beginning, think outside the box, which you did with an engineer's perspective. And it's very difficult when you're actually in that system, you've been in there for a long time, to have, one, the time, two, the ability, and possibly the inclination to actually do that.
Yeah, what I think is interesting on this whole kind of conversation is the in Canada we have our system has a apprehension and a fear towards people with dementia, and we try and protect them at all costs. And I agree, don't put them in compromised situations, but you're familiar with the Hoogeveen in the Netherlands, right? Obviously, I would. So they are able to go in their own houses, they're able to cook their own food, they're able to use chop, use knives, they're able to do this whole thing, right? So have you met Elroy Jespersen?
No.
So Elroy Jespersen created the village in Langley. So it was Canada's first dementia village. And what Elroy was telling me the story when I was there a couple of years ago visiting. And so they've got this beautiful pond in the middle of this village, and it's a 7-acre compound. It was a beautiful village in the middle. And what his initial vision would be, there's this kind of bridge around this pond, and people with dementia, they'll be able to, the community members will be able to go sit there and just watch this water. I mean, it's not a massive pond, but it's reasonable size. It's probably 15 feet wide and maybe 40, 50 feet long. So just a decent sized little pond, right? And there's this little bridge that goes around it. The vision was to have people stand on there as the sun's setting, be able to just watch it, and little birds might land, whatever. But the British Columbia Health Body said, no. We cannot have water here because people are going to drown. So now it's a rock pond. And as Elroy was telling me, he goes, they're not going to drown. Like, they have dementia. That doesn't mean that they're going to constantly go stick their face in the water and drown themselves. Like, the two are disconnected, but we have this apprehension towards giving them any sort of freedom. And same goes for the kitchen in the village of Langley. There, and I love the village of Langley for context. I don't mean this to sound negative. I love the village of Langley. But they have little gates before the kitchen because the residents aren't allowed to go in the actual place with the cutting boards and knives. Why are we doing these things? And how are these systems that we're using to protect these individuals actually inhibiting their cognitive functioning by saying, you spent 65 years of your life cutting with a knife, chopping carrots and whatever, but now you can't do that anymore. Now you're a liability to that. It's crazy.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The UK Health Radio Awards are back. The 2025 awards will once again include a category for dementia care, and voting will begin in October. So do keep an eye on the website ukhealthradio.com to find out how you can join in with this year's awards. Back now to Andy Gereza.
Yeah, that really chimes with me, actually, because when I was with the Alzheimer's Society here in the UK, and I was managing activity groups for people living with dementia in the community, and one day one of my volunteers came up to me and said that you do realise that Harry has a knife to peel his apple. And I went, yeah. Is this a problem? And yet it was said that, like you say, Harry was in his 80s. He'd been peeling apples for years, and he was completely safe to do that. But we tend to umbrella things, don't we? And I know my friends living with dementia, most of them will tell me that first thing you have with a diagnosis is a piece of paper and then a whole stream of words like can't, don't, etc. And don't focus at all on what you can do. It's everything to do with what you can't do.
Yeah, it's so crazy. And the irony of this whole of the Village in Langley, and I think, and I love the Village in Langley, is that they have a wood shop in there where residents can go in there with a volunteer and use band saws and drills and all these kind of things. I'm like, they can't have a pond. And Elroy tells this. He tells me this story, and it's actually like a big visible thing when you come in. Is that they have this clock, and or no, it's a clock or a bookshelf. I think it was a clock. And there was this lawyer who ended up living there, and he was never able to, in his time, be able to learn woodcraft, carpentry stuff. But then when he ended up having Alzheimer's, he saw the woodcraft wood shop. He goes, "I would love to do this." It was a clock. That's what it was. And so he, as a resident, he learned woodworking and made this beautiful functioning big clock. We wouldn't really ever do that anywhere else, right? And but yet we're so s concerned about the knives in the kitchen and so concerned about the pond that this is okay. And I agree that should be okay to let him safely use the tools once he's trained up and stuff, right? As long as he's make sure it's done safely. And I think that we have this apprehension in the system, but yet before you get in the system, if you're cared for in home by your family, it's all good. You do your thing. So immediately when you cross that threshold to be in this institution, that's when it's not okay. That's when you're a danger. But yet it's not a danger the day before when you're, like you said, cutting an apple with a knife. What's one day different?
Yeah, I think the other thing is, you mentioned there when you're in the family environment and care, I suppose the difficulty is that the people in the family environment then get influenced by the system and begin to question, well, should we be letting them do that or do this? And that's where more problems happen.
Yeah, I mean, and here specifically, I mean, we can question all you want, but in here, if you want to go into a facility, there's such a long line that typically they say you give your kind of top three choices, and if one of them shows up, you have, I think it's 24 hours or 48 hours to say yes, and then you have a week to move in. If you don't like it, well, too bad. It's what it is. So people just have no choice but to amalgamate that as being the way it has to be. And it shouldn't necessarily be the case that we just give in and say, yeah, we're going to give in to whatever you tell me and then bring it home. And I mean, that's what causes issues down the road because people say this is what the standard should be. And you're like, no, that's a bureaucratical process to get there, to have this occur, not what the best case circumstances.
Well, I guess you've got to have that confidence, haven't you, to question those things. And it's only people like yourself and partly this show and other people that I talk to that, hopefully give people that confidence where they can think, well, actually, wait a minute, and just move out and think about things.
Totally. And I mean, in my case, I thankfully had a wonderful family that, I mean, I was a crazy guy that was in my 20s doing an MBA and said, I want to build a dementia village. How? I have no idea. And that was my dream. I mean, I still want to do it, but I was like, how am I doing? No idea. Let's leave everything behind and figure out how we're going to do these things to support my grandmother. Let's do it. And I think there has to be a little bit of crazy, especially for the people that are in the dementia entrepreneurial community, because the system is so fixed. The system is so, this is how we do it. The people go through these cogs this way, this way, this way. So someone like me comes in, how about we change this up? What about if we do these other things? What if we let caregivers care the at home and give them the tools so that they can get clinically valid, personally specific, and culturally appropriate care in home by themselves so that they don't need to go into the system. Save the system money so they don't need it. Maybe send some home care folks in every once in a while. Great. But I think it does take a bit of a radical mind to be okay with those things, be okay being uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's a really good phrase. Definitely. Sadly, times when it's were closed. But I'd say also, one thing you did as well, which I must admit I've never done, is that you did a triathlon a couple of months ago as well, I understand, to demonstrate the role physical activity plays in brain health.
Yeah, I'm mentioning a three now.
Oh.
I did three. I did the last one. I did a extended long course Olympic distance the other day, which was well, it was a long ways. Yeah, so we actually were Bluebell was sponsored by Jack Roo, which is a athletic triathlon clothing company. So they've actually sponsored Bluebell for all of our triathlon gear. So shout out to Jack Roo. Yeah, so for me, I do many triathlons. I'm training to an Ironman next year. And my goal is to be able to highlight that one, Alzheimer's and dementias are present, and physical fitness is a way to decrease your risk, but also to bring awareness that there are other ways out there to do it. So as I run on all the Bluebell, I have Bluebell slogan and stuff on the back of my shirt talking about what dementia is, just so people can be aware of it. So hopefully I can bring more awareness so that I can reduce a bit of that stigma and help people as they go through it. That's kind of my thing. So I plan on doing quite a few more, like I said, an Ironman next year. And my vision is to try and find a way that I can bridge those sort of athletic things as a way to bring awareness to dementia and the supports that we really need for it.
Well, we wish you all the best in that, and let us know how you get on. It's been an absolute pleasure, Andy. Thank you so much for being my guest, and you'll have to come back on in the future, and we'll chat some more.
Absolutely, would love it. Thank you for inviting me, Pete. I appreciate it.
Thanks to Andy, and I wish him every success with Bluebell Village. And if you want to find out more, do take a look at the website bluebellvillage.ca. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition of the podcast. Thanks for joining me, and I hope you'll check back soon for some more dementia talk right here on the D Word Podcast.